Attention, please. Places for top of show. Places for top of show. Hello, and welcome to Twins Talk Theater. We are Cindy.
And Stacy.
And we're talking about theater, backstage life, and all the excitement that the audience doesn't get to see.
Enjoy the show.
Hi, everyone. Today's January 5th, and we are having a Twins-only podcast because it is Twins' birthday.
No, it's your twin's birthday.
Yeah, in my phone it says twin's birthday. So, happy birthday to us. Yay!
Yay! So what do we do? A podcast.
I'm sure we will have pizza at some point in our own respective cities. I know I like pizza, so that should probably be what we do. Okay, so we were thinking of talking about what I do as a technical director, because we haven't interviewed any technical directors. So far, we've talked to a number of stage managers, which is what Twin does. We've talked to some designers and no technical directors. So yeah, I thought I'd give everyone a little glimpse into my world as a TD and what I do in different areas. And yeah, see
what and a little bit. And a little bit of what's going on with Allegiance, which I know it hasn't started rehearsals yet, but they have started building. So I'm kind of hoping to get some more information on that, too.
Yeah, Allegiance is one of the current plays I'm working on. I currently have 5 plays that I'm working on. Most of them are at the Norris in Palos Verdes. And Allegiance is up in Little Tokyo with the Japanese American Cultural Center and East West Players. So I will be talking about both. So I started as a TD in high school when my TD there, Dan Cork, said, "You should be a technical director." And I said,
"No, that's college. That's not high school."
I meant college. Yep. College at the University of Redlands. And Dan said, "You should be a technical director." And I went, "I don't know what that is." And he said, "You tell other people what to do." I said, "Well, I'm not very good at that. I'm good at doing things." And so it was a little bit of a, "Stacy, stop touching that. Go tell somebody else to touch that, or watch these people and make sure they don't get hurt, and come over here and sit in this meeting and do these drawings." And so I was like, great. So it took a while to figure out how to not be the one physically doing everything, but I'd say I'd figured it out pretty well by now. I mean, it's been, 17 years since Dan probably told me that. And now I do spend a lot of time making sure other people know what they're doing and meetings and scheduling. So as a TD,
it's got to be closer to 14, because 17 years ago we were still in high school. So
oh yeah, 2000. So Dan probably told me that in 2003.
Yeah, so more 14-ish years ago. Yeah, yeah, that sounds a little better. I'm like, we're not that old. I mean, I know it's our birthday, but
I don't do math apparently, unless it's geometry on a set drawing. So as a TD now technically I'm the assistant technical director at Palos Verdes Performing Arts, but Greg Forbes and I kind of don't have direct lines of I do this, you do that. So he's the TD on some events, I'm the TD on some events. The shows that I tend to do are the in-house shows, meaning the professional shows, we do 3 of them, and the conservatory shows, we do, this year we're doing 4, in the past we've done 3. So I oversee all the technical elements of the in-house shows, and Greg does a lot of the rentals and one-off shows, the present series that we've talked about in the past. So as the TD, my job is to basically manage and run everything that the stage manager is not doing, i.e., everything that goes on stage that does not include actors, which is usually what I tell people, because they're like, "Oh, you do theater, you act." And it's like, nope, I take care of everything else. So I oversee the design process and make sure people have the information for set designs, lighting designs, sound designs. I hire crew to make sure everything is built and loaded in and lights are focused. I give information to the designers if they need to know what we have in stock, what we have up in the air already, how many battens we have, or what kind of lighting instruments we have, or what stock flats are in storage, and how much time we need to build it. I work with the producer on the budgets, on how much it'll cost to build a show, how much it'll cost to rent a show, the crew budgets and all that, so we can stay in budget and hopefully make money at the end of the day, which is usually the plan in theater, but not always what happens. And I also then sit through Tech Week and work with everybody on making the show actually come together. So Tech Week is usually, it's depending on the place you're at, it can be more than a week, it could be a week. The Norris, we usually do 1 to 1.5 weeks of Tech Week, and that's when everything finally comes together. It's the first time the crew is on stage with the actors. It's the first time the actors are on stage with the set. It's the first time the lighting people actually get to see what's going on and program lights. It's the first time the orchestra is in and the microphones are on and the costumes are on and everything comes together. Up until that point, everybody's kind of working in their own little world, and the stage manager and TD are the go-between to make sure, you know, whatever happens in rehearsal gets translated over to what's going on stage and vice versa. So there's a lot of paperwork and emails and sitting in meetings and sitting in designer runs and trying to make everything work. So when you get to Tech Week, everything kind of fits together like a puzzle, and then you have a show.
So let's really go back easy, a bit, but... because you like totally skipped over one of my favorite parts, which is the tech drawings. So go way, way back. So back when, say, you are starting on a show and you have a designer and you get drawings, then what do you do as a TD in order to make those drawings a reality?
There's different ways. We can either build a show, meaning we start from scratch, we hire a designer and he comes up with stuff and then we build it, or we rent in shows, in which case the set is already built and sitting in a warehouse somewhere, and I get pictures and drawings of that and figure out how it's going to fit in the space. So let's start with if we're going to build everything. For Allegiance right now in Little Tokyo, that is a new design by Seo, and he has all the drawings, and the Pasadena Playhouse is constructing those. I'm also working on Picasso at the Pinocchio, which goes up in a couple weeks, and Greg Fritchie from the Long Beach Playhouse has designed those, and we will be building those in shop at the Norris Theater. So for those, the designer usually starts working with the director and artistic team a little before I really get involved too much, coming up with the ideas. What do they want this show to look like? What do they want the practicality to be? For Allegiance, it takes place in the internment camps that the Japanese Americans were sent to during World War II after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. The American government rounded all the Japanese Americans up and put them in internment camps in the middle of nowhere in case they might do something or side with the Japanese. So it takes place with them being put in these internment camps. So it's a very stark, cold, wood and metal, barren place. So how do we translate that to the stage? Say designed, it's mostly steel frames and scrim material stretched over them to be the walls, to be a fake proscenium, and working with Adam Fleming as the projectionist to give him surfaces that he can do a lot of projection work on. This show takes place over about 6 years, I think, they were in the internment camps. So there's a lot of stuff that changes and moves around, and you can't always do that all with scenery, so we're using a lot of projections. So once the designer comes up with a concept and his ideas, he works on the design. He actually does the drawings and figures out how it's going to work and how it's going to look and how big everything is and what line sets things go on. And then when it comes to me, I work with them to figure out exactly how are we going to, say, fly this barrack flat in and out? How are we going to attach this wood paneling decking onto the stage, which we can't really screw into because we don't want a lot of holes? How many line sets do we need to fly in something that's, you know, bigger than a couple inches? It's these boxes are 2 feet by 1 feet. Do we need more room to fly them in and out? How many people do I need to fly it in and out? How is it going to be rigged so it can do that? And I talked to the designer and the people building the set, because on this specific show, I'm not actually building the set, and make sure all of that is worked out. So when we actually load into the space, we can accomplish the design that Seo has come up with, while also getting it up, getting it safe, getting it ready for actors to come in and work on. Now, Seo did a lot of the... He's very great at all the drawings and didn't just give drawings of what it looks like, but he did a lot of the, what we call the technical drawings, meaning how wide is this piece of steel? How much yardage is this fabric? You know, how many square feet is something, then how are we going to get it all built? So I didn't have to worry about the technical drawings on that aspect as much, I think, because I came in a little bit later, so they needed those earlier to send to the Pasadena Playhouse.
That's so unusual because so many people, and I know you've said this in the past, people you've worked with, where you get like a napkin of something and then you got to go in and figure out like, exactly. Is this 4 feet tall? Or is this 6 feet tall? Like, how the hell am I going to build this little napkin drawing? So yeah, that's so pretty awesome that he had that knowledge and gave it to you beforehand.
Oh yeah. It was super great when we sat down to talk about it. I was like, oh man, you've even figured out sight lines and where borders need to be and all that. Normally that's what I do. So it was great working with him. Now, on the other side, like Cindy was saying, there's the people who give me napkins or basic dimensions. Greg Fritchie, who I'm working with, is an older guy. Seo's, you know, about 25, 30 years old. Greg Fritchie's been doing this a long time, and he still does all of his drawings on paper, which is fine and great. It's just, it takes a little more time than to translate it into technical drawings. So Greg built a model. He had color samples of everything. He gave me great drawings, but it doesn't show how to actually build everything, which is mostly what you get when you have a designer. So I have to then go back and look at this drawing. I'm like, okay, this wall is this many feet by this many feet. Great. How is it put together? What do I need to give to the crew so they can build it? So usually then I redraw everything basically from the backside. So not the front side, what the audience see, but from the backside on how it's going to be built. How many pieces of wood, at what length, and where are they attached together, and how thick is the luan I put on the front of it so it can be stable enough, and what kind of scrim am I using on the top half, and what is the molding actually attached to instead of it just, you know, in the picture from the front, it's floating in the air. Okay, but it can't do that, so how are we attaching everything? And I basically build everything as if you're looking at the back of the set. So when I give it to the crew, they have a cut list of how much wood needs to be cut at what sizes, where it's going to be stapled together, and what it'll look like, so that when we stand it all up and get it painted, it's what Greg Fritchie says it's going to look like. So it's very much like the back end of things, making it work, you know, taking the design, figuring out exactly how to build it, and then putting it up on stage and having it painted and dressed so that it looks like the actual design. That can be very much a puzzle and working on how to get things back and forth because a designer may not always stick to the common measurements of a piece of plywood is 4x8 or a piece of wood comes in certain sizes. So there can be some puzzles of getting it together or how is it actually going to stand up or, you know, how are we going to get the exact look? But that's kind of the fun part of figuring out and testing things, because no matter how many sets you've worked on and built, there's always something new on every set. So it's always, well, let's try it this way and see if it works. And if not, we have a backup plan for when it doesn't work.
Do you have, and I know we mentioned this a little bit in a previous podcast, but do you have a preferred program that you use to make these drawings? I know we talked about how, like, you did when at U of R originally, you learned how to hand draft everything before you learned the computer. And then I think you learned AutoCAD first. And now sometimes you use Google SketchUp. Do you still go back and forth between the two of those? Or do you have a third one? Or like, how do you decide what you're going to use?
Yeah, lately I've been using a lot of SketchUp because it's a free program, which is great. AutoCAD can be very expensive. And a lot of people, because of how expensive it is, a lot of people don't have AutoCAD, especially in the smaller theaters or community theaters and stuff like that. So SketchUp is a great one because anybody can download it for free. So I can send drawings to people and they can open it in SketchUp. There is a paid version of SketchUp that will translate things into AutoCAD in the DWG drawings. I thought about getting that because, like, working with Seo, all of his drawings are in AutoCAD. And so I have to open AutoCAD to view all of those. They're it's also a very different program. SketchUp, I think, is a lot more user-friendly if you don't know how to do all of the drafting. The tools are a lot easier to understand. AutoCAD, it's a little harder to just sit down with AutoCAD and figure out how to use everything. It's, you kind of have to know the language and the tools and what you're doing. Obviously, AutoCAD is much better if you do know how to do all of that. You can do layers and stuff like that, but it is more expensive and not just intuitive like SketchUp can be. So I seem to be doing a lot more on SketchUp because I don't have AutoCAD on my work computer. I only have it on my home computer. So while at work, most of my drawings are done on SketchUp.
So that makes sense.
Yeah. So the second part, if we don't build a set, is renting in a set. A lot of operas and musicals have sets that are already out there to rent. I know you, when you were at TCO, had a huge set collection that you guys would rent out to other people. Mostly musicals and operas. Straight plays don't usually do that because there's just so many of them. Nobody keeps an inventory of that much stuff. So when we rent a musical and we look around and we find who has it and how I think it would fit on the space and if we like the design and the style and it fits all the needs that we want for the show, then we rent the package of a set. And then they usually send me information on, you know, how big things are. Really good companies will have drawings and the original designs and stuff for that, so I can physically translate that into the drawings of our space and know how it goes together. A lot of times those have been lost and I get pictures, just run-on pictures of what the set looks like. And from there I have to figure out, how is it going to fit in the space? How does it move? How many crew people do I need to move it? How many crew people do I need to load it in and build it? Because it comes on any kind of truck. I've had it anywhere from like a 20-foot flatbed to two semis loading in a set. So, you know, how when I get all these pieces, like a jigsaw puzzle, that are not all put together in the same order, and I lay them all out on stage, how do I build 15 different set pieces with these pieces? So in that case, the picture is good because I'm like, okay, see this color green? Put them all in the same pile. I think it's a set. And we will figure out how to put it together.
I have no idea how you do that without drawings. Because at TCO, we had drawings on everything. And my scene shop manager has been there long enough that he knows how most shows go together. And we would still spend a week before we shipped a set out for him to lay it all together and put it all together with all of our drawings and his memory and pictures before we shipped it out so that he knew how to put it together later. So the fact that you just do this all off of pictures sometimes is kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, it can be because you don't know exactly what goes together. And sometimes we do get a TD sent out with them, and sometimes we don't. Or sometimes the TD shows up and they've never done this set before. And so it's kind of like, well, I guess we're just going to figure it out. And we definitely ended the show or ended, you know, loaded and been like, well, I have no idea what these couple pieces of wood are for.
No Hopefully idea. They're not essential.
Yeah, if they're needed. And sometimes we get things off the truck and I'm like, I think we're missing pieces. Like, I don't understand how this scaffolding is going to go together minus a couple legs. And in that case, we need to either, you know, if it's a local place, go pick it up. If it's not a local place, if we had it shipped across the country, then we need to figure out how to do it in-house and build extra pieces to make it work. Because we just don't have time to get another one shipped. Plus, shipping is really expensive. That's a huge cost right there. So we usually try to stay local, but some places don't have sets that we need local. So it's definitely, that's more of a puzzle already built in. We need to put it together. It's like an actual jigsaw puzzle. Like, we drop it out of the box and then we're like, okay, separate by color. Let's start there. And then let's see if there's any labels on the back and see if it goes together that way. And then sometimes after we built it, we're like, well, that could have been much easier if we started on this section instead of that section. But there's often no way to know how it's actually going to work. So that one, I don't know if one's more complicated than the other. I mean, obviously building it, you know exactly what you're building. And you know it's going to fit in the space. Bringing it in, we often can get bigger stuff because we just don't have the room to build large stuff. But then, you know, it takes more time to figure out how it goes together. And sometimes the set that's rented doesn't fit in this space. We did Music Man not long ago, about a year ago at the Norris. And the set we rented, the Peru House, was massive. It would have taken up half of the stage and wouldn't have fit in our wings at all. And so I was like, well, let's talk to the people we're renting it from. Can I cut off 3/4 of this whole unit and still make it workable? Like, is it physically possible for me not to just build the whole thing, but build a section of it? Luckily it was, so we just built the porch and not the entire living room of the Peru House. But otherwise it just wouldn't have fit on stage, like physically wouldn't have worked. So there's some things that we get and we just never put together. They just stay in the shop because they're not going to work.
Yeah, I was just trying to think if one would be, well, I'm trying to think from like my experience, if it was easier for us to rent something or to build something. But sometimes I would spend as much time as a production manager dealing with the rental and the shipping and the insurance and all of the paperwork that goes in the rental and the negotiation and then, you know, figuring out how to load it in and stuff. Sometimes I feel like that was almost as big of a headache as just building it ourselves. Because when we built it ourselves, then we could make it fit and I could cut, you know, cut sizes if I need to, or cut numbers if I needed to, because we were building it all in-house. So from a production manager's perspective, it's almost, you know, 6 of 1, 6 of the other, because you can make your own adjustments when you build it yourself. But
yeah, that's just it. But then sometimes you at TCO had a beautiful shop. It was huge. And you had a paint area and you had a prop area. At the Norris, our shop is about the size of twice the size of our living room. It's not that big. And most of our tools are kept downstairs in the trap room and are brought up by elevator and then we set up and use. So it's not all just up there and ready to go.
Right. So, you can't just walk over from the table saw over to the workbench and put it all together like we could have.
Exactly. So it took more time for us to build. And since we don't have a huge shop and we don't have a huge storage area or much at all, we just don't have the capability of building certain things. When we did Young Frankenstein, we got the national tour set, which was a bit of a headache to get all together and in, and we had to cut a couple things here and there. But man, it was beautiful. The texture and the paint on all of the set pieces and the way they aged the metal, and the backdrops were way too big for our space, which caused some problems because we couldn't fly them all the way out. So figuring that out, but they just had a craftsmanship and the space to do it that we just physically don't have. And so sometimes renting the set, you know, is easier because we just can't physically build that. Plus then afterwards, what are we going to do with that set? Trash it? We have nowhere to store it. So if we rent it, then we just send it back to where it came from and that's the end of the week.
Right. So jumping back to Allegiance, how is this why they've hired Pasadena Playhouse to build this set?
Yes. They have a shop at East West Players, and I haven't been there yet, but from what I know, it's a pretty decent shop because they did build things for us when we were at Long Beach Opera. But this build, I think, they kind of shoved a third show into East West Players season that they're not used to having. And so just the timing of getting it all together didn't quite work out, I think. And we'll be talking to Andy, and he is the production manager for East West Players, so he'll probably know a little bit more. But the Pasadena Playhouse, where Brad Inlow works, who's a friend of Cindy's from the University of Pacific, they don't have a huge shop, but it's a nicely laid out shop. And they have the people and the manpower and the tools and all to build something kind of this size and during this time period, right before and after, around Christmas time, New Year's time. So they bidded it. I don't know if anyone else was sent for the bid on this show, and they got it, and then they started building. And I believe they got the bid and maybe started building about the week that I joined the team. So I didn't have anything to do with going back and forth on that, because Brad mostly worked with Say to figure out what needed to be built and the bidding process and all that. But I know Andy and I went up to the Pasadena Playhouse about 1.5 weeks ago, and I took pictures and posted it on the Facebook site. that they're doing great. They're almost done. Everything is beautiful. Brad figured out, like, I had a couple questions, but I figured since it was Brad, he'd be perfect. And he answered all the questions before I even got to him. He's thought about how it's going to fly in, how it's going to go together, how the bolts are hidden so you can't see them when you put the scrim on it, and how the floor interlocks so it doesn't have to be screwed to the ground and everything. It was so exciting to see it and see Brad again and then be like, there's no problem. Brad will take care of everything.
Brad will take care of it. That's true. So is Pasadena Playhouse painting the set as well, or are they just building it?
They're building and painting it. There's not a much, I mean, when you look at it, it doesn't look like there's much paint treatment. All of the metal, or half the metal, is wrapped in a dyed scrim. So the scrim is basically the paint treatment on that. But they're still painting all of the metal, because if you don't, it's going to rust. So Krista Perkins, who also comes from the University of Pacific, is painting the set. And they found this new paint they hadn't used before, which is a little more expensive, but it does not chip or rub off of the steel, which is excellent, because always the problem I have when I paint something is, like, a couple of times after using it, it's all been scraped off the metal, and then what's the point? So
yeah.
They're painting everything with that. And like I said, metal can't just stay metal because it's not sealed. It'll rust really fast. So the barracks and some other things that are supposed to look like raw steel, Krista is painting to look like raw steel. And she actually did 4 samples of paint treatments to look like brushed steel or new steel or aged steel or steel that has already started rusting a little bit more. And say, oh, the set designer went up there and saw them and chose which one he wanted. And now Chris is going to paint the metal to look like metal, which most people don't think about. But yeah, it needs to be done. Same with the floor. The entire floor is planking of wood with a little bit of a gap to look like the planked wood floors that were actually in the internment camps. But we can't leave raw wood, because raw wood will splinter, it'll crack, it will get costumes cut on it, so that's definitely not going to work. So Krista is now painting all the wood floor to look like raw wood floor with a sealant on it, so that it won't crack and it won't get splinters, and actors aren't going to get their costumes caught on it or anything like that. So it looks like an unpainted set is actually a highly painted set made to look like an unpainted set.
Okay, so let's move from tech drawings into actually getting the crew, because to me, that's a kind of a difficult task, just like hiring anybody, because sometimes you know the crew and sometimes you don't know the crew. So then how do you go about as a TD, which again, it's different for you at the Norris than it is for Allegiance. So how do you go about getting crew and even knowing the number of crew you need and how many you need, the number of crew you need, and when you need them?
Yeah, I got spoiled at the Norris, because we have a pretty well built up set of crew people that I've had for years. Some of them have been there before me, and I've been at the Norris 9 years. So I know what Steve Hicks can do and Chris Meyer can do and all that, because they've been there and I've worked with them day in and day out for years. And occasionally we bring in 1 or 2 new people just to expand, but I've, usually a base set of people. At Allegiance, it's completely different, because I don't have a set crew up there. And the Eritani Theater, the JACC's theater in Little Tokyo, doesn't have a huge set of crew. They aren't used to producing big shows like this. They usually do a dance show or a traveling show or something where they need a basic 4 or 5 crew members, but this show needs like 15 crew members. So I got the original schedule from East West Players about when tech is, being we load in on this day and you have so many days to load in and you have this many days to do lights and we start on this day. And I said, okay, well, I don't need that many days to just load in, because from looking at the set and talking to Brad, I think I can do it in less. So we cut that down, and I know lighting is probably going to need more time to hanging the lights and all should be easy, but actually programming the lights, they basically need a blank stage or the set on the stage, but without people moving around and working, so that they could physically light the space. Same with the projectionist. He's going to need just dark time on stage to physically get all of his projections working. He can build everything on his computer and he knows roughly what it looks like, but until you actually get in the space and be like, oh, I'm shooting at a slightly different angle, or there's a We're going to have a speaker cluster hanging from the top. It's going to take up a little more room. He's got to work around that. And then working with the lighting designer to be like, okay, I have these colors in this look on this scene. What are you doing? And going back and forth. So I cut a lot of days out of our loaded and gave them to lights and sound and projection so that they have more time to physically work in the space on the set before actors show up. Because you don't want to waste a bunch of time with actors standing around on stage doing nothing as a lighting designer is trying to program something. So I did move things around that way. I've started looking for people to work on Loden and the crew. Allegiance runs for like 6 or 7 weeks. So it's a fairly long run. I'm used to like 2 or 3 weeks. So finding people who are available for that much time to do something. Obviously, I go to the people I know first, but I can't pull anybody from the Norris because I have 3 shows going on at the Norris during the time Allegiance is going on. So I started by going to the people I know from Long Beach Opera, some of my backup crew from the Norris who I don't need for the smaller shows, just for the bigger shows, calling them and seeing what they're doing. I've reached out to other stage managers or production managers that I know and been like, hey, who do you know and recommend who you think might be willing to do this show? And then it's just scheduling, which is more the complicated part. Most techies don't work at a specific house like the Norris. Most of them travel around to different places, just like you do a lot as stage management. So finding somebody who has no job for the next 2 months and is willing to work on a job for the next 2 months for these random hours and specific pay is a lot of juggling. Sometimes people can do some of the shows, sometimes people can do all the shows, sometimes they don't want to commit right now, maybe they'll do Loden and see how that goes to see if they want to be on the show. And so that's the process that I'll be working on a lot this weekend, is trying to get a hold of people and get them in. Like I said, I try to use as many people that I know as possible, because at least if I have a base group of people that I know their capability, then I can bring in some people I don't know and at least know things are going to get done and test the new people out. But it's really hard to do a show when you don't know any of the crew, because like I think I can load in this set in a certain amount of time, but if the crew can't, then you know I just screwed us all over on the tech schedule. So it's a lot of guessing, right, and talking to people and seeing who knows who and who's available and who can come in, and maybe get somebody who I know is a really good master electrician to come in for 2 or 3 days to help focus. That way I know focus is going to be done on time. But yeah, it's kind of all a shot in the dark. What do I think will happen on a space I've never really worked in before with a crew I don't know and a set I didn't build and put it together.
But you take educated guesses based on like what you've done in the past and what, you know, you've talked to Brad about what you think that that's how the set will work. And, you know,
yeah, I think the set should load in pretty easy. Brad is going to be there with 1 or 2 of his guys the first day or two, which I think is all it's going to take for us to load in this set. But then there's all the smaller things. There's a lot of practical lighting in this set that needs to be wired up. And it's not rope light, it's tape light. It's LED, really flat tape light that's going on the downstage side, so closer to the audience, underneath the front edge of the platform we're putting in, so that it makes it look, I think, like a glowing spaceship. They say it looks isolated from everybody else to represent their isolation. But that can't be put in until after the deck's put in. But this tape is kind of picky on how it works and all that, so that's going to take some time that I just don't know how long it's going to take for them to wire in this 32-foot long piece of tape in, you know, half an inch on the deck. so it's like, well, I'm giving you a whole day, hopefully you can do all of this stuff in a day, or maybe you can do it while lighting is still working on programming lights. So we'll see how it goes.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah,
okay, so
definitely guessing.
So then we get to the actual load-in process. And are you there for load-in? You said Brad's going to be there as well. I know usually a technical director, well, let's just go on a usual basis if we're talking general terms. What do you do for a load-in? Like, what does load-in consist of?
Load-in consists of, I walk into the space that morning, and load-in can take a couple days, but when you walk into the space, everything is it's not blank. They usually have whatever their normal lights are up in the air and whatever their normal soft goods, the legs and borders and main curtain are in their typical spaces. And the stage is blank and it's kind of like an open palette to work with. So usually the first things I do is try to move the soft goods around to wherever we need them, because I don't always need a leg on line set 3. I might need it on line set 5 because I have something flying in on line set 3. And do that first so we can fly line sets, all the pipes above the stage in and out, and do that as fast as possible so that then we can start loading in the set and not have to worry about, you know, getting in the way of, you know, some sets when they're built you can't fly things in because it blocks them. So we bring all of that in and we do the soft goods. Then we unload the truck or we bring the stuff in from the shop or wherever it was built, and we have to put it on the stage. Now, you can't just go anywhere on the stage. It's been designed as a specific spot. So then I usually mark out on the stage, based off of the drawings, where it's going to lay out. So this platform is 32 feet wide and it's 22 or 24 feet deep. So I lay out chalk marks or spike tape marks or something and say, this is where this specific set piece is going. So that way, when it starts to be built, it ends in the right spot, it starts in the right spot, it's where exactly the director's been blocking all of his actors. And then everything starts being put together. I'll have the crew there, and I'll have basic ideas of how the set goes together, but Brad is going to be very useful in this because since he built it, he knows exactly how it's going to go together. So between the two of us, we'll supervise and help and make sure everything goes together. Another job of mine and the production manager when there is meal breaks. Because everybody needs to eat, you can only work so many hours and then you have to eat and then you have to have so much time to eat, either 30 minutes to an hour, depending on how many hours you're working in a day. And then the end of the day has to be called so that nobody's working overtime and make sure everyone knows what the next day's schedule is. So I don't spend all my time physically working on building the set because I need to be answering the questions on if something needs to change. I need to be watching the clock on when meal breaks are. I need to be making sure we don't run out of staples, or if somebody gets hurt, there's a form that usually has to be filled out and where are the band-aids and all that. So exactly what Dan Cork was telling me however many years ago we decided that was, like, I can't 14. Physically 14. I can't physically be the one building the set because somebody needs to be standing back and looking at the overall picture and making sure it's going together or on the right time frame, or if something comes up last minute, I need to be the one to figure out, you know, how to fix it or how it's going to affect something else. So I do still get my hands dirty, and I would much rather get my hands dirty more than not, but I still have to be the one kind of watching the whole thing and making sure it's working.
So then what's your next step? Everything's loaded in, everything's good, then what do you do for actual performances? I guess tech is next.
Yeah, it's like tech week's kind of a big one.
I totally skipped tech week. Yeah.
So after we get the lights in and the set in and everything's programmed and we think we're ready, then we drop actors in. And usually it's the first time the actors have seen this. Well, sometimes they've seen the space, but not the set. So it's the first time they're actually walking into this world. Everything before that is in Cindy's world of rehearsal halls and
colorful tape on the floor.
Yeah, tape on the floor. Attention to. Exactly. It's like you just stepped off a 3-foot platform and you walk through a wall. You can't.
Yeah, exactly. And you walk through the wall.
So then we drop them on the stage and they're like, oh, that's what it looks like. And then they get really discombobulated and they like, wait, how do I sit on this chair? And is this really what it's going to look like? And what wing do I exit from? It's like, yep. So then we have to go through and like basically respace the whole show so that the actors know what they're doing. And the crew who's running the show has never seen the show. They've probably never read the script. They've probably never seen the show. They know what the set is. And so now we start rehearsals where the actors have to figure out, oh, that's how heavy this bench is. And the crew has to figure out, oh, that's what this bench goes to and when it moves on stage. And, oh, that's when this drop flies in, and figure everything out. Oftentimes I do paperwork for shows, which I give to the crew that says, you know, scene one, this is what the stage looks like. Scene two, you have to fly out this drop and you have to move this chair to a green spike and you have to hand this actor this prop. Scene three, undo what you just did. Usually a little more complicated than that. But so they have, you know, those tools so they know what they're doing during the show. For Allegiance, we have 1 week of tech and 1 week of previews. So we basically have 1 week where everybody is together trying to learn the show, trying to get it all working to the ideas that the director and designers have all come up with. But we've never worked together until actual tech week. So tech week can be quite long and stressful because they're usually quite long hours, like 10 to 12 hour days. We know there's a time frame. The show opens in a couple of days, whether we want it to open a couple of days or not. And things could go great and things could, you know, hit the fan and go all over the place. Yeah. So tech week is sometimes called hell week because it can be a very long and grueling process. And through that, I'm there to, again, not physically do anything. I'm never on crew. I don't pull in the rails or anything. But a lot of times I'm standing on stage being like, nope, this needs to go to this bike mark. Nope, you can't exit that way. You just got hit in the head by a drop. Nope, you can't, you know, you can't do this because you're going to get hurt or something. I don't always say no, but a lot of figuring out what exactly happens. Because like you said, in rehearsal, you're like, hey, a drop comes in. And everyone's like, yeah, great. But when a 200-pound drop comes in with a steel bar on the bottom and you're standing in the wrong place, you seriously get hurt. So there's a lot of, you know, making sure everyone knows what's going on and where to move to and where not to stand and what is physically happening on stage during that time. And then also lights. There's a blackout. A light needs to be refocused. There's a sound cue. Musicians. Allegiance has a live band. So sometimes the musicians are playing a tempo too fast or too slow, or their lights are in the way of the audience seeing things, and just a lot of things you don't think about that are figured out during tech so that hopefully when you get to previews or opening night, it looks like we've been doing this for ages instead of just 1 week.
Do you ever, as a TD, and I have to say, in my experience in opera, this is usually not the case. Usually not, but it might have just been the TDs I work with. Well, it's half and half, I guess. Do you ever actually go to like a room run so that you know what the show looks like? Like a run through in the rehearsal room so that you kind of have an idea of the flow of the show so that you can communicate that to the crew a little bit easier, or not?
Oh yeah. I try to always have at least a designer run in which hopefully the show is as complete as can be and blocked and spaced and all that. And all designers and myself, hopefully as many as possible, I know rarely do we get everybody, come to watch the show. And we tell the actors, or the director, you know, introduces all of us and tells the actors, like, these people don't care if you skip a line. They mostly just want to know what you're doing and how the thing flows. That way we can figure out if I'll watch it and be like, what did that guy just pick up? And they're like, oh, he picked up a book. I was like, well, there's no book on the prop list, so we need to add that to the prop list. Or, oh, they're singing a solo downstage right. It's like, okay, great. So I have room upstage left to do a scene change. So I need to make sure that set piece is on stage left so I can move it on during this solo downstage right. And then the lighting designer needs to know there's a solo downstage right, so they have a special downstage right, or they have a spotlight on them downstage right, so that they're drawing the focus from when everybody else is doing it. So then we watch the entire show and we're taking notes and talking through the entire show to each other and explaining, you know, the director is being like, this is my vision here. And I'm saying, hey, we can't do that. I don't have, you know, we didn't get this backdrop or whatever. That way I know what's going on. And that's how I build my paperwork. And that's for the crew on what comes on and off when. And when the lighting designer finishes their lighting plot, so we know what to hang in focus. And the costume people are being like, oh, they are doing splits. Like, they can do splits in the costume I have for them. I need to find a different costume or something like that.
Well, ideally, a lot of this would be communicated to you through stage management during the rehearsal process.
Yeah, but there's always one or two things.
Fingers crossed, but ideally, you know, there won't be any huge surprises when you get to the final room run, and it's just a lot of, oh yeah, you did tell me that, but exactly. But you're right. Sometimes that doesn't happen, and sometimes stage managers miss things, so it's good for everybody else to know what's going on.
Especially when I work with the conservatory department, they often have newer stage managers just out of college or just starting college, and so most of the time they're really good, but occasionally you get one who just doesn't send rehearsal reports no matter how many times you ask, so there's only so much you can can, you know, try to get done while guessing right. what's going on. And so that's why I'm always like, nope, we have to be at the designer run, because I do not want to get to tech week and be like, oh, you think there's a tree here? Nope.
That wasn't communicated.
Can't build a tree in 2 days, so we're going to have to reblock or figure something out. So yeah, absolutely. Going through run-throughs is very important. Then after the run-through, we usually release the actors, or they go sing with the maestro or something. And then the production team sits down and is like, okay, what questions came up? And that's usually when people talk about, you know, oh, okay, so they picked up this prop. What is it? It's a book. Oh, okay. Does the book need to be anything specific? Or is it just a book? Or is this book need to have page ripped out of it? Or, you know, whatever they might not have known from the rehearsal reports. And then usually the designer run only happens a week or so before tech week. So there is some time to still manipulate things and get things in working order before we drop everything together. But yes, absolutely love designer runs.
In the opera world, we do it the day before, so you don't got a lot of time.
Yeah, a day is still enough to quickly change some paperwork around.
That's true.
But then, of course, tech week, none of my paperwork is ever completely accurate because, you know, I saw a show where people are picking up imaginary things and moving on imaginary set pieces, and then I had to build it so that the crew's moving on these imaginary set pieces, but I don't always know what the set pieces are exactly, so how many crew people do I need, and at what side of the stage do I need them on? And I come up with all that paperwork. I think you call it a who, what, where in the opera world?
Yeah, in opera world, it's a who, what, where.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's usually not complete until, like, opening night, if then, because like you said, it changes on a regular basis. I've even done shows where we, you know, we'll update it one night and then do a rehearsal in the afternoon and then update it during dinner break and then do another rehearsal in the evening. So you just have like all these multiple copies of things as you work out what needs to happen in the piece.
Mm-hmm. And I always give all of the crew at the start of the rehearsal. And then I say, take notes. And then at the end of the night, I collect everything and talk to them. And I'm like, okay, so you actually moved this. You actually moved that. This is a different color spike. Got it. And I spend that evening after rehearsal typing it all back up and making changes. And then I say, version 2. And at the top of the next day, I hand it all to them. And usually by the time we get to Wednesday or Thursday, because we open on Friday, I'm like, I'm not making any more changes. You take whatever notes you need on it. Because a lot of times they take personal notes on it. Like, you know, something they need right. to know, but nobody else needs to know. So by Wednesday or Thursday, I'm like, I'm not taking these anymore. These are yours. You finish taking whatever notes you want. I've done all the big notes. You do whatever small notes you need. And then I expect them to carry it around through the entire show. Because I didn't spend all that hours putting this together just for you to be like, oh, I didn't look at my notes. Well, it's 5 pages of notes for a 3-hour show. I kind of need you to keep that with you. But most of the time it works out pretty well.
Most of the time. And then you get to performances, and by then
my job should be done.
Yeah. I was gonna say, by then you should have most of your stuff, you know, you should be in like a relaxed mode by then.
Yeah, if we get to opening night and my crew doesn't know what they're doing, then there's a big issue and I should have fired some of them earlier or brought in new people or something. So by the time we get to shows, they should run perfectly fine without me, which is another reason why I don't physically do things during the rehearsal process. I don't want them to get used to me presetting props. They need to preset props. I don't want them to get used to me sweeping and mopping the floor. They need to do that. So when we get to performances, they know exactly what they need to do and how everything's going to work and how to solve some problems on their own so that I don't have to sit there during every performance. Because otherwise, I'm just going to do that. I'm just going to sit there. Because,
yeah.
Yeah, by then they should have everything worked out and figured out. So, yeah, once performances start, I start thinking about strike. Because that's the next thing I need to worry about. Is how to take it all apart within 1 or 2 days and ship it back so that everything is complete and done. So, when the final curtain closes, then the last step of my process starts. No show closes for me until about a month afterwards, when everything's been returned and accounted for and bills have been turned in and reimbursements have been turned in and crew's been paid and all of that. So though actors are done on their final dropping of the curtain, the crew still has, and the TD definitely still has, a couple more weeks to wrap up a show, or hopefully a couple weeks and not longer.
So about how much time do you have to actually strike usually?
Typically we get everything done in 2 days. We usually start strike the night after the matinee. Usually our final show's on, at least at the Norris, the final show's on a Sunday. So after that, we start striking things, depending on what needs to go out first. If there's lighting rental in there, then we try to pull those down first so they can be packaged up and sent out of the way. Or a lot of drops need to be returned the day after the show's closed, so let's pull those down and get those packaged up so I can send those off the next day. You know, or take the set dressing off or remove all the props or whatever. Then the next day we come in for an 8-hour day and strike everything, whether we strike it and put it in a truck or strike it and trash it or strike it and put it in storage or however it works. Strike goes way faster because basically just pull everything down. Don't get hurt, but you don't, it's no puzzle. You just have to take everything down. Whatever screw you put in, take it back out and get it to its smallest size possible and put it where it needs to. Then we usually pull down the electrics and get that back to either a house hang or start hanging for the next show, depending on what comes in. And then the last thing we do is the first thing we started with, and we remove all the soft goods and put them back to their house position or whatever the next show's position is. And then at the end of the night, we sweep and mop, and hopefully it's done that day. If not, we might have to come in the next day to finish things like actually putting the props away or, you know, cleaning everything up, but usually within a day we have 90% of the set down and returned.
I have to say, I think in the opera world, and usually it's because in opera you don't own your own performance space. You literally have 8 hours, and usually you have a union crew, which makes it a little bit different, but you have like 8 hours to do everything that Stacey just said. Stacey's lucky in her situation because it's her theater and her building, so they're not necessarily on a time crunch. You know, she can like do half one day and half the next day. But in the opera world, especially when you rent a set, you have a truck come and it's usually sitting outside before your show closes, you know, and as soon as that curtain comes down, or sometimes at intermission, we've started striking at intermission. If you know you don't need a set piece and you just start,
you throw things outside at intermission, being like, not in act two, go outside.
Right. And you just start striking then and you need to get everything done. But yeah, I would say a month is a pretty good estimate about how long it takes a TD and a production manager to close out everything, because you got to make sure people are paid, things are returned, finances are in order, invoices are done, insurance is taken care of.
Yeah. And the stage manager has books that need to be updated and made sure that's turned in. I keep files of all of my final drawings and even some of the pre-drawings and the paperwork and all of that. So if we need to, it's like, oh, where did we rent that fogger from that one show? I can go back and pull it up and see where it was. So yeah, there's plenty of paperwork and stuff that have to be done behind the scenes afterwards that the curtain goes down, the show's not over. I still have paperwork and stuff to do before the show's physically closed in my mind.
Yeah. And usually by then you're already on like two shows ahead, so then you just got to juggle everything.
Oh yeah. Right now, let's see, it's January 5th. I just opened today the Peter Pan Jr., which is a conservatory show at the Norris, and it closes on Sunday. They're little kids, so they only do 4 performances. And then we're already building for Picasso at Lepina Gil going on in the Norris. We open that in, well, we load in a week. Between those two, we're doing Wynonna and the Big Noise, which is a one-night show. So we can't even load in Picasso till we finish Wynonna and the Big Noise, which will be a big concert. Then after Picasso, we go into Beauty and the Beast, which is the next conservatory show. But that also texts the exact same time at the Allegiant show texts. Luckily I load in a week earlier, so I'll be at load in for one show and then load in for the other show. And I also have a cabaret jazz at one building at the pavilion at the Norris Theater. And that takes me through the next 2 months. Is that many shows and events and things to be worried about. Plus we have, we're starting to plan our next season. So while working on tech and pre-show of all these shows, we're trying to, Chris Gilbert and I are trying to figure out what shows are we doing next season, where are we getting the sets from, what is the budget for it, what are the time slots they're going to fit into, so that we're always working ahead on a show. Or 5 shows or a season.
I was trying to think of something to say, but my computer is actually dying and I have no outlet to plug it into.
So... Okay. We're doing pretty good on time, so maybe you need to plug in your computer.
Yeah. But I think we got to the end of the process of what it is to be a TD, so I think that was pretty good timing.
Good job, Twins Computer. Way to go. So, yeah, that's what I do in a nutshell in about an hour's time. So, yeah, pretty good.
That's many weeks of life.
Many years of life so far. Okay, so thanks for listening to our podcast. Happy birthday to me and Twin, and we will talk to all of you guys next week. Bye.
And now it's time for pizza.
Pizza.
Thank you for listening to Twins Talk Theater. If you would like more, visit our website at twinstalktheater.podbean.com or on Facebook at Twins Talk Theater.
You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music. Also, give us a review on iTunes and tell us what you liked about the show.